Welcome to We Are Libertarians, a podcast that focuses on libertarianism for those under 30 years old. I am your co-host, Chris Spangle. Joining us is another co-host, Creighton Harrington.
Hello.
Hello. And also Chris Galt.
Hey, Spangle.
Hey, how's it going? And Galt is your real last name, and Spangle is my real last name. I know we're going to get that, so let's just clear that up from the very beginning. We Are Libertarians is a podcast that focuses on the libertarian movement for those under 30. And We Are Libertarians was a branding idea that I had about a year ago, and we set up a Facebook page and started promoting it to create a college libertarians group. And over the last year, as I've met people like Creighton and Chris Galt, I've realized that YAL and Students for Liberty do a great job of organizing college libertarians already. What's missing is a central location in Indiana for people under 30 to talk about the libertarian movement, and that's the point of this podcast. And so what we're going to do every Thursday is get together and talk about the libertarian movement. We're going to talk about current events from our point of view. We're going to talk about the political parties. We're going to talk about activism. We're going to talk about anything that relates to the libertarian movement for the millennial generation. And I've known Chris Galt for, a year now? Maybe longer?
Yeah.
Okay. Very insightful. Thank you. And Galt was the campaign manager for Ed Coleman, and we worked together, and I taught him everything that I know, and that took about 5 minutes, and that's how we got to know each other through his activism at YAL and on the Ed Coleman campaign. And Creighton and I haven't really spent much time. I think last week when we did a practice podcast, that was the first time that we really had a chance to sit down and talk in depth. And I am the Libertarian Party Executive Director in Indiana, and Galt is more of a campaign manager, and Creighton is more of the philosophical type. He's wearing a Mises tie today to the podcast. So this is actually our first episode that we're posting, but it's the second one we recorded. We made the mistake of using Audacity last week, and it crashed as soon as we hit the stop button. So it was a good practice podcast, but this is the first one that we'll officially post. I want to give you guys a chance to introduce yourselves a little bit further and talk about, you know, your goals for the podcast. Chris?
Yeah, everybody calls me Galt because that's a pretty common name in the libertarian movement, being John Galt. Everybody always asks me,
who is Chris Galt?
Who is Chris Galt? Right. Or it's too bad your name isn't John, or my name has a U in it, and so they're always like, too bad it has a U. But I am the executive director of the Young Americans for Liberty chapter at IUPUI. I helped start it with Matt Kappas. Been going for about a year now. Work with Creighton.
My name's Creighton Harrington. I call Galt Galt because there's like 300 Chris's.
There's two in this room.
There's two in this room, and there's plenty more in this movement. But I got started in all this back in, I went to DePaul University in Greencastle for my first 2 years of college, and kind of got started in this, tried to start a chapter there of Young Americans for Liberty. And I switched to IUPUI, and now I'm in the Young Americans for Liberty chapter there. I am the Indiana State Chair of Young Americans for Liberty, which kind of makes me want to make sure that Young Americans for Liberty is nonpartisan. So despite the placement of this podcast on the web, we are nonpartisan. So any higher-ups listening to this, make sure you know I said that. But yeah, I got started in this a few years back and kind of just got – I found what I truly, truly love talking about, fighting for, and I just – immersed myself in the whole movement, the ideas, the history, the advancement of the ideas, and I hope to, out of this podcast, just bring some of my perspective to whatever we're talking about and keep it a little bit higher brow, right?
Well, maybe. Well, I'll do my best. I'm probably the one that will derail us the most, and I'm the oldest at 28, so you guys are both IUPUI students, and how old are you guys?
21.
22.
Okay. Just a little bit of housekeeping before we move on. We're going to record this every Thursday or thereabouts about at 12:30. So if you have any questions or comments for us, or you know, maybe I'm going to work on maybe a phone number through Skype so people can call in and we can actually take calls on the podcast in the future. And if you have any comments or questions, please go to wearelibertarians.com. and that will forward you to our Facebook page, and you can leave comments and questions there. There's also a Twitter and an email if you want to get in touch with us, and that is...
WeAreLibertarians@gmail.com, and WeAreLibertarians is the handle for the Twitter, but it's the letter R, not A-R-E.
Okay. I think there's a space limit there.
Yes.
Yeah. So you can reach us. Just remember WeAreLibertarians.com, and that'll forward you to the Facebook page. The actual audio will be posted on podcast.lpin.org, and download the RSS feed and the iTunes feed there, and you can also listen to it on the Facebook page. So please go to Facebook, share it, like it, let your friends know, spread the word. That's really how we're going to promote the podcast, is through Facebook and Twitter, and that's how it's going to spread. So thanks for listening. We appreciate it. So let's move on to non-housekeeping issues now that we made introductions. Let's talk about Super Tuesday. Galt came in a bad mood today because he just had that hangdog look. And I said, "What's wrong, buddy?" And he goes, "I've just been depressed since Tuesday." Why are you depressed? What's wrong?
I don't know. I expected him to win his first state on Tuesday.
Who's he?
Or Ron Paul.
Okay.
Just the party didn't let him do that. So.
Mm-hmm. And let me be clear, this is a podcast produced and hosted by the Libertarian Party of Indiana, but because this is geared towards millennials, which is those of us who were born from 1980 to 2002, Ron Paul is a subject that we will talk about. We'll talk about the Republican Party. We'll talk about all those issues that affect us. And Ron Paul's in the news because he didn't actually win a state. And you said that the party didn't let him. What do you mean by that?
Well, they've run a fixed game since the beginning. They chose Romney the day he decided he was running. Santorum can't win. It's impossible. The numbers mm-hmm. aren't there. He wasn't in Virginia. He's in Indiana. He won't be in many congressional districts in Illinois. So
Santorum did actually sue his way back onto the Indiana ballot. Oh. So Santorum will be on the ballot here in Indiana. And so what do you think is next for the Paul campaign? Is this pretty much it?
No. He'll keep going. He'll keep speaking to students. He'll keep campaigning. I really think the Paul campaign's done a great job and will keep doing a good job as a campaign. And they'll go all the way to the convention.
So if you can't win the nomination, what's the point?
Well, technically he can still win. I'm not going to say he's out. He's looking for a brokered convention because I actually got a letter from him that said straight in bold print he cannot get the 1,000 needed delegates to win the nomination.
Who, Romney can't?
Ron Paul. It's Ron impossible.
Paul. Okay.
But if there's more than one candidate, or if there's more than two candidates, it'll be split more. So he could still win with less than 1,000. So that's what he's looking for. Santorum keeps winning, catches up to Romney, makes it a four-way split. Maybe even Newt doesn't drop out.
You and I argue about this a lot. You say that Ron Paul is second in delegates, but when I go to Politico and I look at the delegate count, Ron Paul has 47 or 67, and Romney has 400 and some, and Ron Paul's in fourth. But... you guys say that he's in second. Explain this to me. I really don't understand why you disagree with Politico and CNN and other news sources.
Well, you said 47, and I think that's even a high number. Before Super Tuesday, I saw Paul had 9 on CNN.
Right.
So don't know if he's in second now after
right.
Tuesday because I don't know. I haven't looked into mm-hmm. who got what delegates on
Tuesday. You've just been
too
depressed to look. It's
but before Super Tuesday, his campaign said he was in second because the news doesn't count soft pledges, and soft Ron Paul pledges don't switch.
Okay.
If you're a Ron Paul delegate, you're not going to be a delegate for anybody else.
What is a soft pledge?
A soft pledge is they're not bound to actually vote for that candidate at the convention.
Mm-hmm.
So they go and at the moment they pledge to support Ron Paul. But depending on the outcome of the rest of the election, if they drop out, whatever, they can change their vote.
Okay.
So they count their soft pledges as hard pledges because Ron Paul delegates aren't going to vote for someone else if Ron Paul's still there. It's just the libertarian way.
On a little higher note, it's important to realize that Ron Paul is doing, you know, light years better than he did in 2008. And I would argue, and I think a lot would agree with me, that his 2008 campaign was really like a spark that sort of ignited something that had been, you know, sitting in the bellies of American people for a long time. And his 2008 campaign, which was really admirable for how disproportionate his chances were then, it really kick-started this whole, I mean, the Tea Party. I mean, you hear people talk about the Tea Party. I mean, without a doubt, if it was not for Ron Paul's 2008 campaign, there would be no Tea Party. The first Tea Party, the first gathering that called themselves the Tea Party happened in 2007, and it was a bunch of Ron Paul supporters. They thought of the idea of making it on the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party. So that whole, you know, in 2010, I mean, it really owes the Ron Paul movement its life. The Republican House of Representatives really owe Ron Paul everything right now, because if it wasn't for him in 2007, this grassroots upsurging of small government conservatism and liberty and all this, it really wouldn't have had the force behind it that it has now. And it's still a growing movement. So that being said, him doing light years better just makes, you know, the future look, you know, at the very least, extremely hopeful, because, I mean, it just imagine all the stuff he's setting up now. I mean, he's the first one to admit that his big thing are ideas. I mean, he's a politician, and he says the best way to get the ideas out there is to win. But he recognizes that for something to be, you know, legitimate and longstanding, it has to be serious, and it has to, the ideas are what is important. And he is trying his best to make these ideas become the mainstream ideas. And he sees the best way of doing that is becoming president, which I agree with. But that doesn't mean that him not becoming president won't make these ideas even bigger. I mean, Barry Goldwater didn't win, and Ronald Reagan would never have had anything without Barry Goldwater. So
right. And actually, the Libertarian Party was formed because Goldwater Republicans just couldn't stand Richard Nixon. And the second that he formed that he took us off the gold standard, a group of people formed the Libertarian Party and said, we're done with the Republican Party. And that's, you know, in a lot of ways, Ron Paul is a continuation of that Goldwater conservatism. And I have taken a lot of heat privately from friends because I've never thought that Ron Paul really had a chance at winning the nomination. I just follow politics too closely to think that, you know, I've loved the activism, and I think that he's great for the libertarian movement because he does bring these ideas to the forefront. And, you know, I'm a person who is in the Libertarian Party and became a libertarian, small L libertarian, because of Ron Paul. I was a reporter for WXNT and a producer for a morning talk show at WXNT, and I attended the 2008 convention where a group of Ron Paul delegates were unseated. And the state Republican Party violated their own bylaws and election law to keep those Ron Paul delegates out because they didn't want them to influence who was going to the Minneapolis convention because they were worried about a brokered convention because Paul had started to pick up steam. And I just remember when the first person that told me about this was an older woman who came up and was crying about it. And I was like, wow, that's really like a weird emotion at a political convention. You don't see that a lot of times. And I started looking into it, and that was the moment for me where I just decided that I couldn't be a Republican anymore because they will stop at nothing to keep heretics, i.e. libertarians, out of the fold. And I think that the influence of the libertarian movement has grown in the Republican Party, but it's still not strong enough to overcome that hurdle. And I think the Libertarian Party is valuable because there will be candidates like Gary Johnson or whomever our nominee for president is in the race to give us that vote, that we don't have to vote for the lesser of two evils because it's still evil. And that leads me to my next question to you both. We'll start with Galt. If Ron Paul is not the nominee, would you vote for Mitt Romney or Rick Santorum?
I would not vote for Mitt Romney or Rick Santorum, no.
I wouldn't vote for either of them. Me and you do have a disagreement on this, though. I would just be so loathing of any of the candidates that I'd vote for the worst of all evils, just so that the Republican Party would lose and they would realize that they can't put these center of the road.
Are you
idiots.
Admitting on tape that you would vote for Barack Obama?
I'm not saying I will. I'm not saying I won't.
Galt and I are ready to strangle you. Galt, what are your opinions on that?
Well, you can make the Republican Party lose without voting for the Democratic Party. You can vote third party, and the Republicans will still lose.
I've heard this a lot from college students, especially, and from a lot of Ron Paul supporters. And I've heard it. I've also heard I'm going to write Ron Paul's name in, which is literally a wasted vote. Like, Libertarian Party members are familiar with the term wasted vote because we get accused of that a lot, but. Literally, your vote will not count if you vote for Ron Paul. And that's why I encourage people to vote for a Libertarian candidate as an opposition vote, even.
And I mean, it's not like it's Bob Barr again. It's an experienced candidate that was a governor.
The presumed nominee is Gary Johnson. He's winning straw polls in the LP across the nation, and he'll actually be in Indianapolis for our state convention on March 24th. We'll participate in an LP presidential debate on Saturday morning, and then we'll have a straw poll here in Indiana. And he's a two-term governor with something like 700-something vetoes. He's the real deal, and he's a legitimate candidate for the Libertarian Party. And I don't understand how you could have that option and still vote for either write in Ron Paul's name or vote for Barack Obama.
I'm not committed to that yet. My whole point is that if the Republican Party is going to be so intransigent as to shove these people down our throat that really have no position on anything, and the positions they do have that they're up front with, they've actually, had the opposite position like 5 years ago. I mean, if they're going to throw these people down our throat because, they're electable or they don't upset the status quo or whatever their reasons may be, they're friendly with the establishment or whatever. If that's going to be their game, then I think that the best thing that people in the liberty movement can do is do whatever they can to exceedingly demolish those people making those calls. And it could be that you vote libertarian and maybe there is a strong enough percentage of libertarians to say, wow, for the Republican establishment, say, wow, we can't in the future, neglect this portion of the Republican Party. If we want to beat Democrats, we have to cater to what they believe in. And majority of libertarians are extremely ideological. I'm not saying that that's off the table. I'm just saying my goal is at that point is not to vote for who I think should be, or not to vote for the president, because I know that my vote isn't going to go for the president. I mean, the guy who's going to win is going to be,
You've got a growing Libertarian Party in places like California. The Libertarian Party is the only one who is adding new registrants in California. The other two parties are declining rapidly, and people are becoming independents, and they're looking for a third-party way. You've got this Libertarian bloc of young voters in the Republican Party who say, I will not support the Republican nominee. And I could see a world where Gary Johnson or whomever our nominee is could get to that 15% threshold and get into the debates. And then at that point, it's game on. And I think that's really for the Libertarian movement. That's the next strategy. In my opinion, I mean, obviously, I work for the Libertarian Party, and I believe in our message significantly, but, let's continue that on through November, and when you've got an opportunity to continue on, and really, if you hit 15%, then a third party, someone like Ross Perot, can get into the debates. So, I mean, that's just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I agree with most of that. I would say the Republican Party as a whole isn't always bad. I've worked for Republican campaigns before, worked for Republican consulting firms before, or interned, and I've seen good Republican candidates that are Libertarian Republicans that can win and try to win. And so I don't think that as a whole they're bad. It's just the establishment and the leadership of the party itself that we are trying to change.
That really controls the voting mechanisms. They control things like conventions. They control who gets on the ballot with slating. I mean, it's a pretty rough system. I mean, people leave the Republican or Democratic Party and they come over here and they're like, there's no litmus test. Well, like, as long as you're in the libertarian quadrant on the world's smallest political quiz, like, yeah, welcome. You know, it's an open democratic process. You know, guys like Jim Wallace are looking at it going, oh, man, maybe I should have run as a libertarian. You know, so this is a question that I've wanted to ask all week, because we're starting to hear more about this alliance between Romney and Ron Paul. And maybe Ron Paul would be his vice presidential candidate. And, you know, maybe Romney's looking at that as an opportunity to hold that block of young libertarian voters. If Ron Paul were Mitt Romney's running mate, would that change your mind about voting for Mitt Romney?
Maybe. And the only reason I say that is because I feel like it'd be a George Washington with John Adams, or a Thomas Jefferson with Aaron Burr, where back when you got... when you were elected president, your main opponent became your vice president. So you were always arguing and you were always had conflict. And it really just made, you know, the ideas or the difference in opinion, you know, kind of shaped the policies. Nowadays, it's just the vice president's kind of like, unless he's Dick Cheney, he's just there to smile and say gaffes on national TV. But I think if Ron Paul was able to hang around Mitt Romney long enough, I feel like Ron Paul, with the tenacity he has and the, you know, consistency and the intelligence, that, you know, some of that would seep through Mitt Romney's brain and he might actually, like, have a...
And that's presuming that the handlers let the vice president get anywhere near the president.
Yeah, I think it would persuade a lot of Ron Paul people. I personally still probably wouldn't vote for Mitt Romney. Just because I think it was Hamilton that said the vice presidency is the least important position in all of government. They don't do anything unless somebody dies. So I would not probably vote for a Romney-Paul ticket. I would probably still vote for someone else. But
would you? Do you think?
I don't think he's actually. I think Ron Paul's too principled to actually run with Mitt Romney. Yeah,
that's my next question. Do you see Paul accepting that that opportunity or lead weight, depending on how you view it?
The only thing I can see Ron Paul accepting from Mitt Romney is maybe like a cabinet position with the economy, or because he's not, or something for his son in the future. I don't know.
My personal opinion is that if Ron Paul accepted the vice presidential nod from Mitt Romney, it would diminish my view of Ron Paul. I would really look at him differently. I would look at him a little like he's a little less principled, even though I'm a political person and I understand what Creighton's saying about, you know, the fact that maybe he'll have some influence. It still would make me look at Ron Paul a little bit differently. I mean, how many people do you think would take that view within the Ron Paul movement?
I think plenty would, and that's kind of the view I take. Like I said, I'm not, you know, saying that that's what I'd vote for Mitt Romney. I see that as being like sort of the best possible thing that could come out of it. Personally, I don't see Ron Paul making that choice. I don't see him as becoming, you know, with Mitt Romney. Because Mitt Romney, I mean, Ron Paul, I mean, anyone who actually knows Ron Paul, you know, throughout his, you know, has followed him and not just heard about him on the news. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's almost, it's so crazy how principled this man is. I mean, he is so, like, I mean, one of the great stories that you always hear when we have these student get-togethers and they talk about Ron Paul is that, you know, things like the Congressional Medal of Freedom or something, I think it was, they were going to give it to Mother Teresa, and Ron Paul voted against it, and he got a lot of heat for it, and he said, well, the reason I vote against it is because, and then he entered in legislation after that and said, if we're going to give Mother Teresa this medal, and we believe Mother Teresa deserves this medal, then why don't us congressmen, the people, why don't we pay for it out of our pockets rather than using the taxpayers to pay for it? And he entered that bill in, and of course it didn't pass.
Right.
And it's like, things like that just aren't supposed to happen in Washington. There aren't supposed to be people so dedicated to a principle. I mean, it's really just unbelievable. And I don't see that man saying that because Mitt Romney kind of represents everything he's against. I mean, he's just he's a compromiser in the wrong way. He's a middle-of-the-road guy. He's a big government guy.
He's a rich guy.
He's a rich, well,
I mean, I'd say that very seriously. I think he is John Kerry 2.0, and I think that significantly will hurt him in the general election when he just doesn't even think about it. He throws out, "I'll bet you $10,000 my wife has two Cadillacs."
I swear, he's going to lose against Obama. If he goes up against Obama, Obama will beat him.
The fact is that these four Republicans can't beat each other. How do they expect to beat Barack Obama? I mean, it just. You know, and I know that there are probably some Ron Paul people that are listening to that who are going, "God, that guy just hates Ron Paul." But I'm saying what I truly believe, and you know, I'm not a cult of personality guy, and I think there's a lot of that with Ron Paul. But these four guys can't beat each other. How can you know? Mitt Romney is losing to Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum in some of these places. How do they expect to beat Barack Obama? I mean, most people don't like Barack Obama, but when their choice is a guy who has no clue what the average person goes through, they you know, I've been traveling with Rupert Bonham. He's running for governor on the Libertarian ticket. And I have seen so many people over the last couple weeks come up to him and say, you know, "I love that you're running, because it's time that one of us is running." Because they look at Rupert as a guy who came from the same circumstances that they came from. And in politics, that's very important. You have to relate to a candidate. And there's nothing about Mitt Romney that's relatable in any way. And I just don't see how he could possibly beat Barack Obama in any
way.
His
hair looks nice.
His hair looks great. He is everything that most people hate about politics. He's a flip-flopper. He's the political Ken doll. You know, that he doesn't have principles. He just says what is told to him. He's a mouthpiece. So, end rant. So let's move on from the primaries, and let's move on to Iran. This week it came out that Israel is looking at attacking Iran, and the war drums are starting to beat louder and louder and louder, and I want to get your views on the situation. We'll start with Creighton, and then we'll go to Chris Galt.
Well, essentially, I mean, I think libertarianism has this kind of, like, this is kind of a murky area. I think Ron Paul is anti-foreign policy, or not anti-foreign, he's anti-interventionism. He's not anti-defense. And I think, you know, that kind of gets put on top of the Libertarian Party or libertarian movement in general, because I know there's a lot of objectivists that are really hardcore war hawks.
Mm-hmm. And that was the question that I was going to pose. You've got a situation where how do you make the distinction? Because Israel is in many ways the litmus test for a libertarian's foreign policy. And you've got a country that is surrounded by people that don't like them, that have sworn to wipe them off the map. Now, Israel has a right to defend themselves. And they would argue that attacking Iran's nuclear capabilities is defending themselves, even though it's offense. I mean, so where do we as libertarians start drawing the line? Do we argue that once you launch a missile into another country's border, you become the aggressor? Or do we say, well, they have a right to defend themselves, even if it's a little bit proactive?
I absolutely agree with the country's right to defend themselves. Now, what I would disagree with is that Israel is making all the calls themselves. And I would also disagree that Israel legitimately feels like Iran is going to attack them. I mean, on a base level, there really is no 100% evidence. I mean, not even some, I don't even think it's like above 50% plausible evidence that Iran is actually building nuclear weapons. And that's what everybody's afraid of. But beyond that, Israel wants to defend itself. That's fine. But when they say now America is required to be involved, that's where I make that's where I stop and say that's their country. Yes, they are our ally. But I mean, we can't be in every single person's, every single country's, you know, bag that we're going to step in and help them. I mean, it's just history has shown that, you know, the greatest nations in the world in history die because of, I mean, overextension. And we're already almost, we're on the verge of imploding on because of debt. I mean, it's just, it's a matter of, you know, if you take, I mean, I don't know, I'm kind of rambling, but if you take the logic of preventative war to its full extent, then what you are you have to concede that the United States has to be in every single country of every single nation, every single city, and they have to be there to prevent someone from having an anti-American idea.
Mm-hmm.
And if you concede that, you are really just, you're considering that the United States should rule the world. And I'm sure some people would be okay with that, but I mean, practically, this, it would be the destruction of America. We could not recover from that. And the kicker is that you're probably just shooting yourself in the foot, because I think a lot of this action that we do to prevent terrorism or prevent anti-American hostilities is really creating them. I think, you know, if you could imagine, you go outside and a school got blown up by some other country because they had evidence that there was terrorists in that building and it ended up being a school. I mean, I think that everybody would probably say, all right, let's go get our AK-47s and start killing us some invaders, because, I mean, it's human nature. And if you're going to blow people up, they're going to try and blow you up back. And it's unfortunate, but I feel like we're just shooting ourselves in the foot, and we're not really recognizing that on a large scale. And we're just moving further down that road. And I don't see us making any ground is being gained in the right direction towards, you know, peace and prosperity, which I hope is what people are looking for when it comes to foreign policy.
Galt?
Well, sadly, I think war with Iran is inevitable with our current administration and all the politicalness surrounding it. I turned on the news on Monday or Tuesday, and it's like the Fox News says all the Republican presidential candidates are bashing on Obama for not already attacking Iran and for not already going to war.
Newt Gingrich is by far the most vocal, and like when he talks, he's like, "You should be terrified in your sleep, and you should be afraid of everything." Yeah. I mean, he's out of his mind.
Yeah,
so
many times I hear the news say all the presidential candidates when they don't think about it. Because there's a fourth one.
Yeah,
But
really?
Times I hear that.
I only watch CNN. I hadn't heard. Who's this?
Yeah.
Ron? Who?
But, I mean, I've seen the pictures of where our military bases are, and it's just all the way around the border.
Yeah, there's a Facebook photo floating around where, like, basically what Creighton said, think about it, okay? You've got Iran, and if you look at this photo of Iran, they put an American flag where there are, like, 50 bases around Iran. And then they said, imagine this. And then they put it, you know, one in Bermuda, several on the Mexican border, several on the Canadian border, you know, one right off of Hawaii. And, you know, I guess we've sort of lost sight that, you know, we wouldn't want that done to us. The golden rule is really the basis of all libertarian thought. I don't want you to do to me or do on my behalf to others what I wouldn't want done to myself. And I wouldn't want a country with 50 bases surrounding my country, you know, especially one as large and as powerful as the United States. And I think that's the most difficult thing for people to think about when they are making the decision to switch to libertarianism is, but there's so much bad in the world. How do we help, you know, and where do we draw the line? And I think Israel is really sort of the litmus test, and it's something that we as libertarians have to really think about and start arguing.
Yeah, like when Iran's threatening to close the Strait of
Hormuz.
Mm-hmm. We wouldn't let Iran come into the Gulf of Mexico, so.
Well, didn't they just put several warships off of the coast of like San Diego or something like it was some sort of threat, and everybody was outraged. And it's like, well, we do the same to them. I mean, how do you deal with the blame America thing? I mean, when there are people who are listening to this podcast that may not be going, yeah, right, man. You know,
well, I would say that
they're sitting there going, oh, these three are just blaming America.
Yeah, and that argument is, I really, and no offense to anyone who believes that, that really is the argument of children. I mean, it really requires yeah. No, but
immature. No offense.
It requires so little thought, and it's so superficial. I mean, for one, you're arguing is that the U.S. government and the Pentagon represent every single American, that they are representative of the wishes and the hopes and the dreams and the policies that every single American would like to put on for the rest of the world to see. And I would say that is just ridiculous. I mean, they have their own goals and they have their own purposes, and they do what they think's best for their ends. And their ends are not always to make American people happy and prosperous. They have their own, I mean, they're run by people.
Mm-hmm.
And to say you're blaming America is like you're saying that, you know, I don't know, it's just you're saying that the government is equal to the people, where I think a lot of people, even if they're not libertarians, would say that the government does a lot of things that I really, really dislike. And if you can concede that on domestic issues, why can't you concede that on foreign policy issues? And I think a good example of this is, I mean, if we're going to talk about Iran, then let's talk about Iran. Everyone likes to talk about Iran's history starting in the 70s with the hostage crisis. Yet if you go back 20 years from that, you have the United States in one of its first secret one of the CIA's first operations of coup d'etats. They overthrew a democratically elected president of Iran. And it's ironic because we always talk about how we want, you know, other countries to be democratic and whatnot. But anyway, he's a democratically elected president of Iran, and he makes the unfortunate decision to nationalize oil. And while I don't think it was completely because of that, but we overthrew his government. We deposed him from power, and we put in the Shah, who was friendly to the United States, but he was a dictator. And as a direct result from that, a more radicalized faction of Iran grew into power and took over, and they took Americans hostage, and now you have that regime, the Ayatollah regime. And you can safely say, I think, that without America's influence in Iran in the 50s, you would not have this, you know, antithesis to everything that is American that is ruling Iran right now. And there are numerous examples of this throughout history. I mean, 9/11 was caused by, you know, terrorists flying a plane into the World Trade Center. But what motivated them to do that? Was it just like blind hatred for anything that wasn't Islamic? Or was there the starting point where they said, you know, if you're going to blow, I mean, a lot of them use the Iraq war, the Persian Gulf war, the first one. And they say, you know, when you sanctioned Iraq, it caused a lot of kids to die, something mm-hmm. like 500,000 or however many it was. I don't remember the exact number. They remember that and they were upset by it, to use, you know, a very understated term. The placement of military bases in Saudi Arabia. These things that America did, while they may have done them with good intentions, and while it may not have been their goal to create terrorism, the effects of it are still present, and people still reacted in a way that was anti-American.
Right.
And if you take the reverse and you look at something like Ronald Reagan removing the troops, the military from the barracks in Lebanon back in the 80s, after they blew them up, the terrorists blew them up. There haven't been any suicide terrorist attacks in that region to a large extent since then. I mean, it just really died down. And while it may feel bad, it's like we turned tail and ran and we looked weak. I mean, it really, the end goal is what we want, like less terrorism. So, I mean, that blame America thing, I feel like, is just chest bumping, you know, this superficial idea. And it's just like you picture, you know, an American flag and a bald eagle in the background, and it's just like, yeah, we're America. And I mean, it's good to feel that way, but I mean, when you're talking about people's lives, I mean, you have to look at things realistically. And people, America doesn't act in a vacuum. People react to the actions of the American government, and a lot of times the reactions are negative, and it costs Americans lives.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and there's actually a video about a 10-minute video that I'll post up on the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/ We Are Libertarians, and it kind of walks you through that history. So if you want to share that video, please do, and explain some of that. So what about I'm going to ask Galt this question to wake up. It's a little warm in here, so we're all the air conditioning's not on the room yet. So Galt looks sleepy. There's the other side will argue that there is, and I don't say Republicans because Republicans and Democrats at this point are the other side to libertarians. The other side will say that there's another sophomoric argument in all of this, and that's no blood for oil. What role do you think oil plays in this entire discussion regarding Iran and Israel and possibly America's involvement, and especially in places like Libya? What percentage would you say oil plays in our involvement in the Middle East?
I would say it plays 90% of the reason we're over there. I look at it as there's countries in Africa that many way worse atrocities and things are going on there, and we're not there because there's no oil there. That's why we're always in a war in a country in the Middle East, because there's oil there. So I think it's the main reason we're that's why we're there.
I would agree that it plays it's a powerful, you know, reason that we do a lot of stuff. I don't know if I'd agree 90%. I think it's more or less the whole concept of resources. I mean, the U.S. government wants to promote, you know, getting resources in general. Oil is just the most obvious and the most prominent. But whether it be strategic location as a resource, oil as a resource, I mean, it's just imperialism, which we have kind of a new type of, I think. It's like satellite imperialism, where it's not like we actually control directly the governments of these areas, but to a large extent, we kind of indirectly do. And I think in general, imperialism, one of the big things is, like, you know, expansion for the sake of resources. And I think it plays a huge part. I think that's the main part. Oil is just the most prominent resource, I think, that we're going after.
If you agree or disagree with us, please let us know on our Facebook page. Go and make comments and post and tell us that we're idiots or that we're smart and right on, and keep it up. So,
we want to answer some questions.
Yeah, we want. If you have topic suggestions that we can talk about in the future, please let us know. One thing that you kids online are talking about, I saw something remarkable today on Fox 59's Facebook page. And it was a news story asking to stop requesting information on a certain story. They said, please stop posting on our Facebook wall. I've asked 3 times for people to post on the Facebook wall. And Fox 59 is, you know, the news. They're always begging for you to post on the Facebook wall. And then Fox 59 today is like, please stop posting about Kony 2012. KONY 2012. I have literally no idea what that is or what that means, and, you know, I need the younger group in the room to explain to an old man at 28 what the hell is Kony 2012? Is that some sort of, you know, dubstep group?
I really don't know either.
Okay.
I saw all this stuff and I looked it up, and apparently this man is just he's the leader of a guerrilla movement in Uganda, who's trying to overtake the government there, and he's just ridiculously tyrannical. I mean, he kills kids, and I guess the invisible children are all the children that he's killed, and he believes he's on a mission from God and all this kind of stuff, and he's just like, he's sort of like, you know, the picture in your head you have of like a really crazy dictator, but he's just not a dictator yet. I don't know what the deal is with this marketing. I don't know if it has something to do with Obama's policies in Uganda. I don't know if it's just kind of like a meme that's just growing like wildfire. Whoever is marketing behind this is a genius, because it's blown up the whole internet. I really have no idea where it came from. I'm completely curveball to me.
Galt, anything?
I mean, I just heard about it yesterday morning.
I thought it maybe was like a new contender in the presidential race, like Kony 2012. I just was like, what?
Yeah, it's kind of confusing being with the 2012 thing. I think Creighton has it right. From what I've read last night about it, I got invited to like 5 different events on Facebook about Kony, and one of them, I don't know, they're having some event at our campus about it.
Really?
So, that looked like tons of people are going
to
go too.
And I don't mean to sound like I'm minimizing. I literally have just no clue. I just saw it before we went to air, and I was like, I'm going to ask these guys about it, because it's something that every younger person that I have on my Facebook page, oh man, I just sounded really old. Younger. These younger kids on the Facebook, they were getting on there. And so if you can help us out and explain that to us, please let us know, because we just have no clue. So let's talk about next week. What are some of the big stories that you think are coming up between now and next Thursday? Last week, when we quote unquote practiced, meaning Chris's computer crashed the second we hit stop, and we're
Chris Spangle.
Spangle, yes. Hole. Yeah, we're praying that when I hit the stop button on this computer that it's not going to crash, so we don't lose an hour of brilliance. So we talked about last week on March 1st, the NDAA went into effect that day. And I wanted to get your opinions on it. Can you talk about what NDAA is? People may see that term and they may not know exactly what it is. Creighton?
Well, the NDAA stands for the National Defense Authorization Act of 2011. It is a bill. I mean, they passed a number of them, but this one in particular is bad because it included in it a provision to essentially create or to declare the entire world as the battlefield, quote unquote, and therefore it was subject to military rule, military law, and that and essentially the president now has the authority to, for no other reason than he says so, to take someone who's an American citizen, put them in jail indefinitely, so for the rest of their lives if need be, and to torture them, and they could be killed, and they do not get access to a trial, they do not get access to a jury, a lawyer, anything. They have no recourse. They are just taken up and put in jail. And this is a huge, huge leap. That it's upsetting that hasn't gotten as much, you know, anger about it that, like, you know, SOPA did or something.
Right.
But it's there, and it's now law.
And SOPA in some ways was more complicated than NDAA. I mean, this is very simple. And American citizens can now be detained just like the prisoners at Gitmo. And I think people look at that and they go, well, Gitmo's different because those are terrorists and we need to detain them indefinitely. Well, no, I mean, even if they are bad people, they do deserve due process and their day in court. And we should be better than the rest of the world and not just hold people indefinitely. And I think, you know, I talked about last week, that day, George Takei on his Facebook shared a photo of him in Arkansas where he and his family were detained in World War II. His parents were Japanese immigrants, and he was raised in an internment camp. FDR put Germans and Japanese, and Woodrow Wilson in World War I put Germans in internment camps and held the Japanese indefinitely because we were at war. And I think we're repeating that history, and that's something that is really scary because after it happens and everybody sort of sobers up, we go, never again. It's never going to happen again. We'll never let it happen again. And then it happens again. And we should, as Americans, be outraged about this.
Yeah, we should. Like Creighton said, everybody stood up against SOPA, and I guess that's because people see that it personally affects them. They can't.
Right.
Google blocks out their logo, and everybody's like, oh, well, what if I couldn't get on my computer and use Google? I need to sign this petition.
Right.
Or Wikipedia. I can't do my paper today because I can't use Wikipedia.
I can't illegally download Game of Thrones.
Exactly. So, or they, yeah, when the FBI shut down Mega Upload that same week.
Right.
I think that people, when they think of the NDAA, they're like, yeah, it's bad, but that's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to be indefinitely detained. I work at a grocery store.
And the reality is that you probably won't, and you probably will never meet anybody that happens to, but there's still injustices that take place, and we shouldn't allow injustice to take place. There are people who will be wrongly or rightly indefinitely detained that are American citizens, and the Constitution forbids it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the one thing that hasn't gotten mentioned throughout the whole thing. Is just like, it's the necessity because we're in a war on terror and all this kind of stuff. It's like, what about the necessity of the rule of law? I mean,
right.
This is the Constitution. This is the law. It's not just like some idealistic statement of principles. It is actual law. And you're just going to throw that under the table because you're wanting to catch the terrorist. I think it was funny, Lindsey Graham, when he was talking about passing this bill, I saw this on The Daily Show, I think, he made a comment about how these aren't just, you know, regular criminals. These aren't just L.A. gangs or something. And Jon Stewart made a very, you know, he did it funny, but it was a legitimate comment. It's like, no, these terrorists probably wish they were L.A. gangs because more people die every day from inner city violence due to gang-related violence than terrorists have killed in, you know, a number of years. And it's just ridiculous that they're focusing so much on terrorism, if you're really worried about anti-American crime and you know, people dying as a result of violence, I mean, if that's really what you're worried about, there are so many other things out there that you could be focusing on.
And look at the people on the no-fly list. People on the no-fly list are wrongly put on the no-fly list that the TSA and Department of Homeland Security runs. And it takes forever to get off the no-fly list if you can even get to anyone that will help you work that out. And that could happen in this situation, where people who just have the same name as somebody that's a suspect is wrongly detained. And, you know, it's why the Constitution was written to keep these sorts of things from happening.
And,
so
yeah, and to make a point I made in our practice podcast, it's like Young Americans for Liberty had a civil liberties tour a few last month. And we brought in some speakers to talk about civil liberties. And one of them was Jacob Hornberger, who is the president of the Future of Freedom Foundation. And he made the point that with this legislation being passed, we have literally taken a step back to pre-Magna Carta England. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the provisions in the Magna Carta was that the king could not just pick people off the street and put them in the Tower of London against their will. With this, we've essentially done the same thing. The president can pick anyone off the street for his own reasons and put you in Gitmo because he's the president. Mm-hmm. And Glenn Greenwald made a really good point as well. He said, he asked, why are the ACLU, why are they always defending these terrible, you know, neo-Nazis and KKK members about free speech issues? And they're always asked, why do you support these terrible people? I believe in free speech, but come on, these guys are just awful. And the response is always is that the government doesn't take away your rights by attacking popular people. Everyone, pretty much 99.9% of Americans really hate neo-Nazis, and they really hate the KKK, and they disagree with everything they say. So the government is pretty safe in saying that these people shouldn't have free speech. But once you've made that leap, once you've sacrificed that every individual should have free speech rights, you've made it so that no one can, logically, no one will have a free speech right.
Right.
And the same thing has happened here. Once you've said that American citizens who are just anti-American don't get the benefits of a trial and jury, once you've made that leap for everybody. And that leap has been made. It has literally been made. And
I don't think people truly understand the nature of government. The nature of government, because we've detached ourselves from the rule of law and have started the process of rule of men ruling, the rule of men, it is now a mechanism. And we now are using case law to govern through the Supreme Court and through state courts. And the Supreme Court and state courts have taken these cases and they've started eroding things. We've blown past the Constitution. We're now eroding the Magna Carta, which gives us the laws that says, you know, the castle doctrine is a great example of that, that your home is your castle. Property rights are extremely important. If you don't know a lot about property rights, it sounds really dorky. But study property rights, study privacy. These things are incredibly important, and our generation is going to have to fight for privacy like the previous generations fought for equality through the court system, because once they start building these mechanisms for people like the Westboro Baptist Church, no one wants to defend those people. No one wants to be the one that goes out and says, I support the group that pickets soldier funerals or that holds up signs that says God hates fags. No one wants to support those people, but their speech is protected under the First Amendment, and it has to be so our speech can be protected. Otherwise, we're put on lists for having this podcast, and we're now eroding the Magna Carta. And if you don't know what that is, you need to look it up and understand the Magna Carta, because we're now starting to just drift from natural rights. We have just about 4 minutes left in the podcast, so and I wanted to say, you guys do a great job at IUPUI, and for our national listeners, that's IU Purdue University of Indianapolis, and it's really the biggest university now in downtown Indianapolis where we record the show. And the YAL group and the group of College of Libertarians and the stew of the libertarian movement at IUPUI is very active. They do a really good job, and I had a position similar to Chris Galt when I was at IUPUI oh so long ago, like 8 years ago. and they just surpass everything that I ever thought about doing. And they had a great... How many people did you have at that event for the Civil Liberties Tour?
Almost 200.
Yeah, which is amazing. And it's incredibly hard to get 200 people out to a commuter campus to show up on a Tuesday night to talk about civil liberties. And I think half the Libertarian Party of Indiana was there, too. and it was a really great event. And if people want to go back and listen to it, I would strongly recommend it. Where can they find the video or the audio of that event?
We're going to post it on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page.
Oh, look at you. You're already learning cross-promotion. See, I taught this kid everything he knows. And you can find that page at facebook.com/ We Are Libertarians. And is there anything that you guys are doing over the next week or two or in the next month that you want to promote and talk about? So if people want to come out anywhere in Indiana for any college libertarian group, if you've got something going on, I know there's something with Tom Woods on April 21st. Up at Purdue, he's coming to speak, and we'll post that stuff to the We Are Libertarians Facebook page, so we can connect the libertarian movement for people under 30, so we all know what's going on, and we can share and swap information and help each other make our event successful. What are some things that are coming up in the libertarian movement in Indiana?
Well, our chapter itself, our IPOI spring break is this next week, but the week after when we come back, all the students are going to come to campus, and there's going to be a giant wall of numbers. We're going to have the national debt 15 to 20 feet long. We're going to be talking to students about the debt, and that's something we didn't talk about in the podcast. But if anybody that's listening wants to come out and help us, feel free. We're going to be there all day, all week, Monday through Friday, talking to students about the debt.
Okay.
And then that thing you mentioned on April 21st is up at Purdue. It's It's put on by Purdue University's Young Americans for Liberty chapter and the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. It's going to have Tom Woods, and they're going to talk about the Fed and fiat money and inflation and economics of it and all that kind of stuff. And it's going to be an all-day thing. And anybody who doesn't know who Tom Woods is, go find out, because that dude is one of the coolest and smartest, you know, figureheads in this whole liberty movement. And he's just awesome. So seeing him talk for a day is well worth the trip if you don't live close.
Yeah. There are some other speakers there as well. There's some people from the Cato Institute.
Yes.
They're just not as cool.
Tom Woods.
Something else we didn't talk
about,
Cato and Coke.
Yeah, Cato and Coke. We'll talk about that next week. Yeah. So that sounds like a cop show from the 70s, Cato and Coke. So in the Libertarian Party, our state convention is a little over 2 weeks away. It's on March 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And we will have a free cocktail hour Friday the 23rd in Indianapolis. If you're familiar with the 465 loop, there's a giant hotel with water slides. That's where the convention's going to be. And Friday night, starting at 6 o'clock, I think, is the cocktail hour. You can come and meet Gary Johnson. You can meet Rupert. You can meet Andy Horning. You can meet all the other presidential candidates and all of our other candidates. And you can meet probably Chris and Creighton. I think they're going to be there. And we can have a little meet and greet. The next night, Saturday night at 9 p.m., is a Jordan Page concert. Have you guys ever seen Jordan Page live?
I've not. I've only seen him on YouTube.
I was an economic libertarian. I really didn't think a lot about civil liberties and the wars. And then I saw Jordan Page in concert, and he radicalized me. He's an inspirational guy. It's a free concert. It's at 9 p.m. on Saturday night. Please come out and join us. Through the day on Saturday is our state convention. We don't participate in the primary system. That's closed party business. So if you want to vote for our candidates, you show up to the business meeting on Saturday, and that's how we select or elect our candidates for office. The business meeting's free. If you want to go to things like the presidential debate, there is a cost for that, because we do have to pay for the space, we have to pay for the meals, we have to, you know, so we do have college student pricing at $60, so you can come and meet the Libertarian Party of Indiana, most of the active people. You can participate in our version of the primary and hear a lot of great speeches from a lot of great people. And you can find more about that at lpin.org. So it should be a really fun evening. So I want to... Yes,
I have
sir.
One more event. Okay. Not to counteract the Libertarian Party State Convention.
How dare you.
But the same weekend, Saturday and Sunday, is the Youth Leadership School we're hosting at IUPUI. If you've not heard of the Youth Leadership School, it's run by the Leadership Institute, which is a conservative training system or training organization.
But they're friendly to us.
But they're, yes, if you can get past some of the crazy stuff they say, the training is legit. The training's good. I've done it, the youth leadership school, about 4 or 5 times now. I've done some of the other trainings they've had, too. It teaches you how campus activism, campaign management, just everything you would need to know to be an activist
activism 101.
So,
I went to CPAC in 2003 and actually stayed at the Leadership Institute, and it's a great resource. And I think our generation of libertarians need to focus less on getting together on Saturdays and chatting in the library and start getting out and getting active, because Ron Paul is not a great speaker. Ron Paul is an okay political organizer and a good congressman. But he's only powerful because a bunch of libertarians got off their ass and did something.
Exactly.
And the movement doesn't die just because he didn't win Super Tuesday.
So if you want to go to that event, it's $15 with the promo code Shane. And I'll post the link to the registration on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page. So hopefully people will come out to that as well.
And just because you remind me, you have to register for the Tom Woods Purdue University thing up to a week beforehand. You can do that. Just go to isi.org, and I'm sure you'll be able to find the link.
All right, very good. Thank you, guys. This actually turned out pretty good, and hopefully once we hit the stop button, it will save properly. Let's all cross our fingers, hold hands. All right, maybe not. I want to thank you guys for joining us here on We Are Libertarians. This is a weekly podcast focusing on the libertarian movement for the millennial generation. Please join us every week and make sure to check out wearelibertarians.com. That'll take you to our Facebook page, and you can get all the information that we talked about. We'll see you next week. Thank you very much.
Oh my God.
Ziggy zaggy, ziggy zaggy, oi, oi, oi.
That was amazing.
I'm really thirsty. I just wanted some water.
Still.
Oh, God.
Like, I haven't had water in 43 years.
Oh. This podcast is produced by What Is a Hoosier Productions.